From walking barefoot in the snow to hiking for miles for a view, it feels good to connect with our simpler side. Simplifying your wellness with Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake feels good too. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st when they go to Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, and use code FITNESS.
Welcome back to the Doc Talks podcast. Let's go!
Let's go! Starring Cambry and Shane hosting, and our special guest,
the one and only Pilot Dawn!
Dawn, it's great to have you here.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. I've been wanting to get on this show ever since you started, and finally let me on. I can't believe it. And I'm really honored to be your first guest here. I noticed that you have a nice guest chair here, too. It's very, very comfortable.
What do they call
it? I'll try to stay awake.
Yeah, what do they call it when, like, it's the king's chair?
The
throne.
The throne. It is the throne, the guest throne. Yeah, it's very nice.
So, Dawn, tell us a little bit about, obviously,
well,
not us, but the camera.
I was born in a small town in West Texas a while back. And, retired from American Airlines during COVID. And we moved here to Coeur d'Alene, and I met Shane out at the airport. I was getting checked out in his Legend Cub that he had at the time, and my instructor was one of my seaplane instructors when I got my seaplane rating up here. And he said, "Hey, Don," he says, "Shane does not have any tailwheel instructors, and I'm going back to flying floats. Maybe you should talk to him." And so I went to Shane and I said, "Hey, you know, I'm retired, but I like to fly, and maybe just doing something every once in a while would be nice." And the next day my phone rings and it's Shane, and he says, "Don, can you come out here? I've got a guy that bought it." I think it was a Luscombe this guy had. And he said, "You need some time in it." And so I came out and flew. And then Shane, reading my mind and wanting to give me a really nice gift, he bought a Stearman. So the first summer I was retired, I was doing rides in this Stearman out here for Shane. And then it kind of morphed into flying seaplanes. I lived fairly close to the dock, and I thought, well, I should get a seaplane because you just can't rent them anywhere because of insurance. I got one, and Shane says, "Would you like to do our single engine sea training?" And I said, "Of course, if I can keep my airplane on your dock." And he said, "Of course." So there we go. That's how I ended up on the dock with my Citabria on floats and working with these two wonderful people all summer long.
I like how he says wonderful people. That's not what he says when the mic's not on. So, yeah, no, and it hits it in a nutshell. So you retired from American. You were there 36 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are on their way to the airlines that listen to this, you know, and you've got a interesting story, and I know your story, and we've actually talked about it on here, but you kind of talk about early on. Right now we've got, what are you, a Gen Z?
Gen Z.
We've got Gen Zs that instant gratification is a big thing. They're going and out and getting their ratings and getting their 1500 hours and you actually have a son that kind of hit right at the right time and kind of hit on all cylinders, but that probably wasn't the case for you, and I don't think it was when you were young, and it's not necessarily the case of what's going on right now either. So, I mean, you want to tell your, you know, you don't have to go into crazy story, but in depth of, you know, kind of what you started off, because you had a bunch of hours before you made it to your first airline thing, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, how many hours did you have anyways?
A little over 7,000.
Yeah.
When I got hired. So I got out of college and I got a job as a flight instructor. I had a CFI, I had a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration. This is 1978.
Okay.
So I'll let the people do the math. Anyway.
Can I stop? I gotta call you out on something. So you got out of college. How good of a student pilot were you for your CFIs and student in college there, Don?
Well, I'm looking at getting a Comanche right now, and I knew I flew a Comanche back in college for my instrument rating. And so I went back and found these old logbooks that they have. They gave you every semester you got a new logbook. So I looked back in there, And I was 19, I think, in 20, those two semesters. And probably about every other lesson, I was either a no-show or I called in sick. Now, the first semester was at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, right. And back then, I think the drinking age in Illinois was 19. So unfortunately, I was not a very good student. In fact, now that I look at that, I go, if I was my instructor, I would have just told me to get the heck out of here. Anyway, they were very nice, and they persevered, and ended up getting out of there with a commercial instrument and CFI.
Well, I guess if you're a bad student, you have hope, according to Pilot Don.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
So, yeah, Cambry, when they start calling every other flight, calling out sick, just realize they're going to turn be good pilots.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give them the feel-good story about how Don made it.
Yeah, if I can do it, anybody can.
That's
too,
right.
So okay. Did you do, and I don't know if I know this, did you do any flying in Illinois when you got out of college?
I was my senior year. I got my CFI my junior year. My senior year, I was a student teacher there. So I had, they had a course where you were under, the first semester you were under the supervision of an experienced CFI. And I had two students. And then the next semester they turned me loose and I had four students the next semester. And they're all, there's Aviation 101, was at the private pilot course. Yeah. Back then, you could get a private pilot's license in one semester for $750.
No kidding.
Back in the good old
days.
Yeah,
that's what it cost back then. But anyway, I got out of college. I moved to California. I got a job in California. I took a trade to plane magazine. I sent resumes out to everywhere that wasn't in the Midwest because I didn't want to live there anymore. And I heard from one guy in Modesto, California, who was an Illinois grad. And he was a chief pilot at a FBO in Modesto. And we talked on the phone. And he said, come on out when you get out. And this was like a month or two before I graduated. Anyway, I came out, ended up working there for... Kind of got stuck there for like 4.5 years as an instructor on 35 certificates. I did some charter. He got me on the charter certificate. I did that. I got my double I, my MEI, my multi-engine, and my MEI, and my ATP while I worked there. And so the check ride, I remember my Part 135 multi-engine check ride was the same as the ATP. And I'd taken a weekend ground school back then. All you needed for an ATP was the written test. You didn't have to go through this. What do they call
it? ATP, CTP.
Yeah. Cry the pilots, CTP.
Right, right.
Yeah. Anyway, crash the pilots. That's right. All you do is watch crashes. Yeah. Anyway, so I did my ATP check, right? I went to the FISDO in Fresno, and the FAA guy was saying, looking at me, he says, well, I can't do that. He says, I don't even see training records and blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, come on, it's the same thing. Anyway, I finally talked him into it, so I got my ATP there also. And then it was then.
That's early 80s?
Early 80s. So I was a member of, I think they called it FAPA at the time, Future Airline Pilots Association.
Okay.
It was you'd pay a certain amount, and every month they'd send you a newsletter telling you, this is back, it was mailed to you.
Yeah.
Before
email. And they would tell you who was hiring or who was furloughing or whatever. In 81, I believe it was, when the controllers went on strike and Reagan fired them all. So the whole airspace system shut down, kind of like it has now. Not nothing like now.
Yeah.
But it was bad. And you had to get, if you wanted to go IFR anywhere, you had to have a reservation and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, my letter started showing up saying, this airline's furloughed this many pilots, this airline's furloughed this many pilots, this airline's furloughed this many pilots. So I thought, this doesn't look good. So in 19, I think it was 82, in the fall, because in Modesto, the flying was good up until the fall and the fog came in, and then it was slowed way down. It's like winter up here. But anyway, I said, maybe I should. I was 25, and I said, I should probably talk to the Air Force recruiter. So I went into the local Air Force recruiter because I thought, well, the airlines aren't going to hire, and I'm starving to death here trying to make money as a flight instructor in this job. And they told me that they would make an appointment for an Air Force recruiter to come down from McClellan, I think it was, in Sacramento, the old Air Force base there, and for the next week. So I came in the next week, and the guy didn't show up. And finally, the recruiters, he didn't know how to recruit pilots. He was basically your normal, just your recruiter guy. His phone rang. He said, they had a flat tire. They're not going to make it. And I thought, this is not going well. And then I think the next week, I finally got an appointment with them, but they could not guarantee me a flying job. They said, we can give you a backseat job as a weapons officer, but not, or whatever the Air Force calls them. But he said, we can't give you a pilot. We can't guarantee that. Vietnam had wound down. They had a glut of pilots at the time, military pilots and stuff. So I said, all right. And then it turns out I jumped around to a few jobs. I did, I moved to the Bay Area. I worked at a couple FBOs there. I actually was a chief pilot and chief flight instructor at an FBO in San Jose at Reid Hillview Airport for a very short period of time. And I was really I had a lot of total time, but no multi time, and I needed multi-engine time. And I got it. I finally got a job flying tours of the Grand Canyon out of Las Vegas in a Cessna 402, and 100 hours a month is what I was flying. So I built the multi time up, and that summer was 84. And I applied to American, and they wrote back and said, "You don't have enough." I had 750 hours of multi time, about $7,000. I'll be quiet.
For, told you.
Yeah, no. It's just, I know it's boring. But anyway, so I applied and they turned me down. I didn't have multi time. I had about 7,000 hours and 750 hours of multi time. Now, my son got hired with 25 hours of multi time and 1,000 hours total. Anyway, then I got a job with a commuter in Santa Barbara. Now I was getting some turbine time. They flew Hanley Page Jetstreams. It's an old Jetstream. They had Turbo Mecha Astazu engines on them. Weird little setup. But anyway, I was getting turbine time there, and I was there for 14 months, and then American was hiring a lot of people out of that airline, and all the airlines were hiring. This is the mid-80s.
Okay.
They're all hiring like crazy. 84, they all kind of started hiring. And American made a deal with the union saying that if you allow us to get this B scale, it was called the B scale, and it was about half pay for what they paid the normal pilots. They said they would hire, they had 450 pilots on furlough. They had 3,500 pilots total. 450 were on furlough. They said, we'll bring back all the furloughees if you sign this contract. And they said, okay. So they signed it. Well, they ended up hiring about 7,000 more pilots. So
wow, on the B scale.
On the B scale, because now they were cutting, the retirement wasn't the same, the pay wasn't the same. But by the time my fifth year or so, we were off of that because we had more of us than we call them the old guard. Oh, I'm on the old guard now, but anyway, they're the old guard. And so we were able to change that. Now, United in 85 went on strike over the B scale. They did not want to have a B scale. So those pilots walked off the job. They ended up with one anyway. And then I interviewed with United also when about 2 weeks before they were going to go on strike. And the lady asked me, I remember it was in Chicago, and she said, how would you feel? Because they hired you as a flight engineer, basically. Okay. They said, how would you feel about being a flight engineer for 17 years? And I go, 17 years? I said, I don't think I'd like that. And she said, well, you know, we have some people here that have been a flight engineer for 17 years. But it's just because it was such a stagnated market up to that point. And I said, oh, I don't think I would like that very much. And I said, would I be a flight engineer for 17 years? Well, you could. And I said, well, I don't know. It went downhill from there. Yeah. And I said, I don't think I'm going to be working for United. And sure enough, I didn't get called back. Anyway, so I got out of American in 1985.
85, so was that when all the legacy old airlines, were they starting to go under then? Or that late 80s?
No, it was more late 80s. I remember because Eastern, Pan Am, Ozark, they were all hiring people from this commuter that I was at. And I would have gone to any one of them, but American came in first and offered me the job. And so I said, okay, I'll go there. But the people that went to those ended up somewhere else.
Okay. Know,
because they did go out of business. So,
there was a dozen airlines back then were majors that you were sending resumes to.
So that was 40 years ago when they did like the hiring boom?
It was a big hiring boom, yeah. And it went up to probably 1990 or so. And then maybe your parents haven't even met yet.
Yeah, I don't even think I was a thought or a twinkle in their eye. So theoretically, then a lot of those pilots are retiring now.
They are. That's why there's such a big hiring. I mean, a couple of years ago, there was a big hiring thing going on.
Yeah.
It's because my generation, we're all retiring. So they have that.
So, Don.
Yes, Cambry.
One thing you always say is paying your dues. Is that you that always says that, or is that Shane that always says that?
I say it. But, I mean, it's coming from what? You know, I mean, listening to Don's story right there is just that. I mean, he paid his dues, 7,000 hours worth, which he probably thought was overpaying his dues and paying for everybody else's dues.
You know, I knew I had to do, yeah. My goal when I got out of school was to fly for an airline. Now, my dad, who was my big emphasis, my mentor for flying, he was a pilot in World War II, flew P-47s and stuff, and he got into aircraft sales after the war, and it was kind of boom or bust. You know, I remember as a kid when he sold an airplane, you know, we had like another car now or a pool table or something like that. And then when it wasn't, you know, when things were slow, it wasn't like that. But he told me, he said, in aviation, nothing is guaranteed. He said, no job is guaranteed. He said, it doesn't exist. But the best guarantees that you can have in aviation for a job are the airlines. Because he had his cohorts that were World War II pilots that went into the airlines in the 50s. You know, they were doing really well in the 60s and 70s. You know, they were cleaning up. So, you know, he told me, he kind of guided me towards the airlines, I guess. So,
Do you have any advice for students, I should say, not students or pilots, I guess, that have to pay their dues again because it's not the same as when your son got hired?
It'll come back. It's cyclical. It'll come back.
Yeah.
You know, the best thing to do is just keep your resumes up to date with the airlines that you're interested in. If they offer a cadet program, I definitely would do that. That was not around for me at all, you know, and the cadet programs, I think, are a good step in the door. It gives the airlines a chance to kind of see what kind of a pilot you are, you know.
Yeah.
Don't call in sick all the time when you're on the if you're no, but basically, I think now.
Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Kachava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at kachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com, code FITNESS.
The military and the commuters supply probably, I don't know, probably 90% of the pilots that are out there now. And I went the basically commuter route is the way I ended up going with that commuter airline in Santa Barbara and then to America.
So,
but yeah, just keep flying as much as you can. That's basically
yeah. Yeah, you got to build the hours.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Cambry's heard me say this, Logan's heard me say this, and probably you. But you know, it appears to me. Let me put it this way: that there's 2 different pilots at the airlines. There are the guys that are just there for the money, that don't care so much about the flying aspect of it. And then there's people like you, I would say, that are very passionate about aviation. I mean, you've flown all kinds of different airplanes. I mean, it seems like every week you're coming out with a new airplane that you've flown over the years or did something with or upside down or did that. So, you know, that experience, I think, is especially now, if they're out there just building hours and CFIing, getting in different types of airplanes just gives you a better feel for that, I think. You know, and you've got a, you know, you can just about get thrown the keys to just about anything and fly it, you know, after reading through the manuals and doing all the stuff there and doing that. And you're kind of the exception. It's neat to see somebody like that because there's a lot of guys in the airlines that just haven't flown GA in forever. And I think you probably hadn't flown until your son got back in it.
Right. Yeah, I was out of it for about 20 years. Yep. And then I actually let my CFI expire probably in the mid 90s.
Oh, that's never good.
I know. And then my son starts showing interest. And about 2015, yeah, it was about 95 to 2015. And I went back and I joined a flying club that had a 172. And I went back and took went with a DP and got all my CFI things back. And then now, of course, it used to be you had to keep your CFI up to date. You had to go to either a weekend ground, usually a 3-day ground school. You had to have 16 hours of instruction. There wasn't this online stuff back then. So it was kind of a pain, you know. You had to dedicate some time to it. And if you're not using it, you know, like your weekends, you're like, man, I don't know if I really want to do that this weekend. And you're not doing anything with it. So
yeah.
You know. That was once a year you had to do that?
No, same thing, every 2 years.
Every 2 years.
Every 2 years, yeah, same thing. But yeah, it was not an online deal that you could do on your own time and stuff. So it's a lot easier now.
Yeah. And you still enjoy flying. I mean, you know, I see you flying.
Yeah.
You're back on wheels now. The Strawberry's off the water, back on wheels, and I see you flying almost every day. I think out there or just
about. If I can. The weather's good, and I enjoy it. So, you know, and the seaplane thing just kind of came to me later. I mean, I was about ready to retire, and I just started flying seaplanes.
Yeah.
For me, you know, you're starting out nice and early, too, so
yeah.
That's really nice. But, yeah, that's probably the most fun you can have flying, I think.
That's
you know,
what I'm
it,
saying.
It really is a lot of fun. I was up here, when we were building our house, I'd come out. We were living in Virginia, and I'd come out here to check on the house. One day I was just sitting there with nothing to do, and I thought, I wonder if I can get a seaplane lesson, just to fly one, just for the heck of it. And I got a hold of Kevin. Bob. He said, oh yeah. I said, well, I can get you in tomorrow. And I said, all right. Anyway, I was hooked after that. So every time I come out here to do to check on the house, I would do a lesson. So I ended up getting my rating the fall before we moved out here. Then we moved out here that spring.
All of a sudden, you're telling your wife, "I've got to go back out and check on the house."
Yeah, they're messing something up again, Linda. They got a plug put in the wrong place. Go out there and tell them to change.
I'll be back in 3 days.
Yes. Yeah.
But you moved here. You were still employed.
I was
for a short period of time because you kind of hit right COVID.
I was right during COVID. I was on the 777, flying international out of JFK, Europe and South America when COVID hit.
Being your mustard stolen.
Being my mustard stolen in that was in England somewhere. I can't remember. Can't believe I can't remember.
I've heard the story.
They took away my mustard. Forgot about
last trip.
The British wouldn't allow us to carry anything over 3 ounces, whereas every other country in the world would. So, yeah, they were Edinburgh, Scotland is where they took it away from me. The last time I'd gone to Zurich to buy it, too, it was really a bummer.
Mustard,
yeah.
I know what I'm getting Dawn for Christmas.
Yeah, well, it's called Tommy's Mustard. It's in a tube, and it's a little screw cap on it.
Get that.
You can put it in your flight bag, and you can put it on your steaks. It makes everything on the airplane taste better.
That's awesome.
For all those pilots out there wondering.
That's right.
Going into Zurich, get Tommy's mustard. Did they have it at the airports?
No, I would buy it in the town at the grocery store on the layover, yeah. But anyway, so getting back to COVID, then they started, when the passengers were gone, we were sitting at home. I don't know how long. It was probably about 4 or 5, maybe 6 months. I just sat at home. They
were
still paying us because they wanted us to not, they didn't want the training to go down. They wanted us to be able to come right back. But we started flying cargo. Let me tell you, flying cargo is really, I think if I were to do it over again, because we used to sit there and say, I don't want to fly cargo because you're up all night. Well, we'd be sitting there in the 777 getting ready to go to Europe and the FedEx and UPS would be taxiing out with us. So we're already, I go, boy, I'm glad I don't work for them. I'd have to stay up all night. And here we are. We got a 10-hour flight for going down to South America in front of us, But cargo was fun. It was different, but it was nice because you could get them to go to the bathroom whenever you wanted to. You didn't have to open the door, have a flight attendant come in the cockpit. You had no flight attendants. You had no passengers. So therefore, you had no drama.
Yeah.
It was very nice.
I've never asked you this. Did you have any stories of drama on your airplane with passengers?
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was there for 36 years. I had a lot of...
What was your craziest drama?
There was a... this is kind of an entertainment. You want me to go into this?
Yeah, of course.
All right. So I'm on a captain on a Super 80, a DC-9-80. We're flying from Dallas to, I believe we're going to Oakland, going into Oakland. And about an hour out, the flight attendant, this is before 9/11. Yeah. I have another story about this. This is prior to 9/11. Flight attendant comes into the cockpit and he says, Don, we have an old lady back here who won't sit down. I think she's got Alzheimer's or Parkinson's and she's not on her medication and she won't sit down. She's yelling at people and stuff. And I said, well, just try to get her to sit down. I go, how old is she? She's like 80 or 85. I go, just try to get her to sit down. And they would give us flex cuffs. They gave the captain flex cuffs. So if you had to subdue a passenger, you had these flex cuffs. And I jokingly said, if I need you, I'll come back there and I'll flex cuff her. Just joking. Guy goes, disappears about 10 minutes later, comes back and says, you're going to have to come back and flex cuff her. I go, what? And he goes, yeah. I go, oh, no, really? He goes, yeah, she will not sit down. Now we're starting our descent to land. We got to get her in a seat and get her strapped in. And So I had a captain when I was a new hire. He says, never go back there. He says, if you go back there, this is before 9/11. He said, if you go back there, it's not going to do any good. He said, if there's somebody that bad off, they're not going to listen to you. Well, anyway, he told me his story too, which is pretty funny. So I go back and this lady's standing there. She has her cane up like a baseball and she's sitting there holding this cane and she's going to whack anybody that wants to come at her. And her medication is in the overhead bin, we find out. But she's not letting anybody get close to that overhead bin. And we have I don't know if she's a family therapist or a psychologist, pays for help.
Yeah.
This lady was trying to talk her down, wasn't doing any good. Well, a lot of pilots, I did too, I wore a clip-on tie.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get in the cockpit, your tie comes off.
Yeah.
So I had a clip. I put my clip-on on. And I go up there and I said, ma'am, you're going to have to sit down. And she goes, like that. And the flight attendant says, you better listen to him. He's the captain. She goes, you're the captain? And I go, yeah. She goes, well, you're the worst friggin' captain I've ever flown with. And I go, oh, my gosh. And I said, well, I better. So I grabbed her. And a couple other guys passed her, grabbed her. She starts screaming. She goes, no, no. The whole airplane's looking now, of course. So I get her in her seat. And I flex cuffed her with her hands in front of her, which, that's not the good place to do it. And I look down, and she's going like this with that thing, and her just rubbing her skin. I'm going, oh, God, the poor thing. Then she reaches up, and she grabs my tie, and she goes, doink, and jerks my tie off. Everybody's staring, and there I am standing there with my clip-on tie in her hand, you know, and I grab it back, and I run back in the cockpit. Anyway, from then on, the guy, usually a lot of times you would fly with the same crew, not the flight attendants, but the same crew. Well, that guy, that first officer, called me Captain Cuff from that on. And he'd tell everybody, he says, do not give him a problem. He ties up 80-year-old women, you know, in the back there.
Did she stay in her seat the rest of the
flight?
She had
to. We had her tied in and strapped in. Yeah. But we had the paramedics make their airplane, and they brought her off first. Yeah. And her daughter was there to meet her, and she was crying. And the mother, she can't travel by herself anymore. That was just the deals. That was one incident. That was only
Did
one.
Did you ever have to handcuff anybody else, or was that one and done?
That was the one and done on that one. Yeah. Never thought I'd have to use them, but that was it.
There's a first time for everything.
But we always practice. Every year we'd have to go to recurrent training and practice. We'd handcuff each other.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Did you have to, like, resist arrest and stuff?
No. You wouldn't fight back. You just let them do it. Yeah, it was not realistic because...
I was going to say.
We sit there and hold our hands behind our back.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. Now they just have the zip ties.
Yeah.
I think.
I have a one more story about the same kind of situation... But it was after 9/11.
That had been interesting.
This was one. I probably don't know if I should say this or not. Well, I guess it's so long ago. When's the statute of limitations, Ron?
I think for 5 years.
Well, this is probably 25 years. But
Hypothetical.
Could have happened.
Not confirmation of allegations.
So after 9/11, I'm still on the Super 80. We're flying in the Bay Area. We're coming in over the Sierras. It's at night. There's a full moon out. The mountains have snow on them. It's just beautiful. And... the flight attendant, I'd met three of them, but the one in the back I hadn't seen. She had blonde hair, I remember that, but I hadn't met her. And so the flight attendant comes in for something, I can't remember why, and I look back and I saw this blonde standing there in the galley like that. And we had a new, we called it the number one on the Super 8, the one that was up front. Mm-hmm. And I said, she was brand new.
Yeah.
I said, why don't you tell her she can come in here and take a look. Oh, that's why I called her in to see how pretty it was.
Yeah,
so she goes, are you sure? I go, yeah, go ahead and have her come on in. So she comes in and I don't really look at her, you know, and I'm showing her I think we were going over Mammoth or something like that. I'm showing her the snow-capped mountains. And this is just really beautiful, you know, like that. And I said, yeah. I turn around and look. She was not a flight attendant. She was a regular passenger. Had this black dress. I go, but wait, you're not a flight attendant? She goes, no. She goes, that's okay. My dad was a pilot. And I go, I don't care. You're not supposed to be in here. I said, get out of here like that. She goes, really? I go, yeah, I'm sorry. You can't stay in here. So, yeah, that was pretty bad.
I can remember as a kid in flight going back and forth from Alaska, going up into the cockpit of the airplane.
Oh, yeah.
In flight and doing that and being brought up there. I don't know. I mean, I guess 9/11 stopped
that. That stopped all that, yeah.
Unless you're on Don's airplane.
Well, yeah.
Try the seat out here.
It was dark out and she looked like a flight attendant from 40 yards away.
No, that's funny. I mean, yeah, you flew through 9/11, so that changed everything. Yep.
I remember the first trip right after 9/11 I flew, and they had put... I was still on the Super 80, and they had put this little chintzy bar on the door. You know, this was before they had the hardened doors, and it was like a big latch that you put over the door, you know, and latched it, and that was it. But I remember that I flew with a guy. He was a Reno Air guy, an older gentleman. He's older than I was, and very experienced pilot. But there was always every time we merged with somebody, there was always kind of this head banging amongst the pilots, and we settle things down and stuff. And he just said, no, let's just do this. You know, this is more important, blah, blah, blah. Well, I remember there was a lady out there. I think we were going to Dallas and we had like 9 passengers. Nobody was still flying back.
Yeah.
We had like 9 passengers. And there was a lady out there. There was a guy that was olive skin. And she was scared. She didn't want to get on the airplane. I said, don't worry. I said, this is going to be if anything happens, you know, we got this bar on the door now, you know, and that's not going to happen again. I told her that's just not going to happen again. So anyway, I just remember that people were scared. People were still scared of that. Yeah,
of course. So you weren't flying the day of 9/11.
I was not.
No. Yeah, you were, no. But you.
I was supposed to, but I had traded that trip, so I did not. I would have been stuck in Richmond, Virginia. I would not have been on one of those. I was on the Super 80, so I wouldn't have been on one of the airplanes that they hijacked. And I didn't know any of the crews personally. They were DC and Boston based crews, so I didn't know either of them. I was based in San Francisco still at the time.
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, I saw you might know have heard this story because you've been around aviation. So it was it's completely off topic here, but I read an article yesterday or the day before. So there was an old American Airlines jet that was down, I think it was South America or somewhere, third world country, that was getting gutted for cargo. And two guys, a flight engineer and a mechanic, apparently steal this 27, might have been, off of the airport and flew off of, and they never found the airplane ever again.
I saw that on Facebook today.
Yeah, I think I saw it the last couple of days. Yeah. And it was American Airlines. I mean, you know, they showed pictures of the jet, and they got on the airport, and they're like, they don't even know how they got them in the air with just a flight engineer and a mechanic. But they got it started.
I'd probably flown that airplane before.
Probably.
But they got it started off of the airport, undetected, and vanished without a trace. Never any wreckage. They thought, you know, there's all kinds of rumors. You read in the article. It was a neat article just because it was so far-fetched and you never
heard
about
it. Where in South America was it?
Do you remember where it was at?
No, I just remember seeing it and like, damn, that's crazy.
Their radar,
I need to talk to them about
spotty.
That.
I mean, you know, they could have gotten down low enough. They could have gone anywhere with it, which they probably did.
It was in the 80s?
Yeah, it was in the, I think it was in the 80s.
I really wondered.
It was in the 80s.
It wasn't anything. I mean, maybe night. I don't know. It was a long time ago.
All right.
But it was one of those stories that just kind of, you know, I had never heard of. And you think, you know, it's not very often that an airliner goes missing or jet that
that's
big.
That's a lot of metal to lose.
Yeah, and they never found any wreckage or anything on it. But, yeah, it was kind of interesting reading that. But, yeah, I don't know if you saw that, though, the same thing.
Yeah.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
On Facebook. Yeah. Literally today, I saw it. I was like, I need to talk to them about that. Thanks for bringing it up.
No, that's a...
You read my mind.
Well, I mean, and you get guys that figure it out. You had that mechanic over in Seattle that did the same
thing. That was crazy. Yeah. Sky King. RIP. Rest in peace. That was a crazy story.
That airplane could be somebody's house down there in the jungle by now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Really, yeah, honestly.
Well, I mean, the story alluded to, like, they got it and we're going to haul it off. Because it was halfway gutted because it was going to be cargo anyway. For hauling drugs, I'm like, well, how do you fly a 727 into anywhere with drugs? Like, okay, you stole it and you've loaded it up. Like, now where are you going to go to land the thing?
Yeah, they're not exactly quiet.
Yeah, you're going to dump the thing off. It's going to take a decent runway to land the thing. And I think they're going to know where the airplane is.
Unless they took care of the D.B. Cooper switch and they could throw it out the back door.
It's still running today, just refueling.
I would be so curious.
You know who D.B. Cooper was, Cam?
Of course. That one is crazy, too. And what year was that?
70s, late
70s, I think.
78, 9-ish.
I just remember when I got hired as a flight engineer, and they were showing us they had a switch on the fuselage back there that would go flat in the air, so they couldn't open that door in the airplane. Otherwise, you could open the door, because that's what he did, is you opened the back door and lowered the stairs. Yeah.
Skydive down. Yeah.
But he didn't do it over Utah.
They found a bunch of money in the desert.
He probably went there looking for the gold that you guys have.
Oh, yeah, we do have a lot of treasure in the mountains. Yeah. You know about that too, Don?
I don't know about that. No. There's gold in all those hills. Yeah.
It was the Inca gold or something. Isn't that what it is? And
you know about it, Logan? Don, you don't know. You need to go home and research it.
I do.
You can invest in it. You can buy, and then when they find it, you get like a percentage of it.
You do.
You can buy stock in the gold in the mountain.
That sounds like one of my normal investments anyway. Do you know what you need to do as an airline pilot to upgrade to captain?
What?
You got to have a furlough, a divorce, and a bad investment.
There you go. Yeah.
Hey, have all three of those, then you're captain qualified.
So I need to invest in the gold in the mountain probably then.
Yeah.
I don't know. That seems like a good investment. I don't know if that would qualify for a bad investment.
Oh, yeah, it would.
That's amazing.
You've got, so following up the your heritage at American, can we say it? Is it... official that he's working, that he's got a moving up to American?
His class date is December 2nd.
Awesome. So we can give a shout out to Don's son, Max.
Hello, Max.
He went straight to Piedmont. Did he do anything prior to Piedmont?
Yeah, he was a flight instructor for a short period of time.
But that was his first top job outside of flight instruction?
Yes.
So went to Piedmont. Piedmont's a great pathway, as you know, we could tell. And then
Piedmont's a wholly owned of American. They own Piedmont, PSA, and Envoy, those three. And once you're in one of those, you can when your seniority comes up, you can flow through to American, to the mainline Americans. That's what he did. He's been there like 5 years, I think.
So 5 years. How many do you know his flight hours roughly?
I think he's got about 3,500 now.
Okay, and he probably went there with 1,500?
No, he had 1,000.
1,000
exactly hours. 1,000. They gave him his, he had like 980 or 90. I can't remember now. Back. I think he had 1,003, he said, or 1,001 when he got hired.
When he got hired.
Back when you could do that a few years ago.
Well, he got the restricted ATP, so he had to fly 2 years in the right seat. Well, he was out for COVID for a while, too. So.
Were you flying when he got hired?
Yes. I have a picture of us in our uniforms together. Uh-huh. I would have liked to have had to fly with him, you know.
Or that would have been
if
cool.
I would have known I was going to retire when I did, he could have jump-seated on one of my flights or something.
Did you retire early?
I did, yeah.
How old?
I like to sit camera.
How many years early?
I retired 4 months early.
Oh, really? Oh, that doesn't count.
That's just a commute from Coeur d'Alene to New York. No, they came out with early retirements back then during COVID because they were trying to get rid of people like me that were not doing anything. The old farts. I commuted to JFK twice out of Coeur d'Alene. I had a Milan trip. I had 5 Milan trips in my last month. I went ahead and took the early retirement when they offered it, the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Both of my commutes back there, and I this is like in April, and my birthday's in September, and I thought, I was going to be 65 in that September. And I said, oh my gosh. I said, I can't do this all summer long.
Yeah.
It was like, I'd go in the day before, and then when I got back, it was another 14-hour ordeal just to get back out here. I'd go to Seattle and then back here. But anyway, my second trip, I was supposed to do 5 of those. My second trip, chief pilot calls me up from New York. I was sitting at home, and he says, how you feeling? And I said, good. He says, well, one of your flight attendants had COVID. So you're done. They had back then. You had to wait 2 weeks before you could go back out into public. So I had 3 trips, and it was. I think the last one, he just said, "Don't worry about it." So I was like, "That was it. I was home and home."
But you didn't get the send off.
I didn't get the send off.
No, that's so sad.
They were gonna give me the fire trucks and everything, and I didn't get that. But now this flying club that I was in Virginia, I went back that summer to Oshkosh. And the owner of the 172 and I were going to fly that airplane to Oshkosh. But before we left, the guys got out, and I taxied down the taxiway, and they got squirt guns, and they squirted they squirted water over the 172 as I taxied by. It's my sense.
I love it. When you retire from the dock, can we do something like that?
Yeah, throw me in.
We can get the firefighter boat to come out.
Squirt down the Satabria.
Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't be much of Satabria left.
Yeah, so that's good. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of people right now that are chomping at the bit to go to the airline.
Sure.
It's
a great career. It really is. It's a great job.
Yeah. They will make it. But like you say, I mean, I think you hit on some things that we talk about. And, it's neat having you here to be able to talk about it because of your experience. And you haven't been out of it that long. I mean, it's still there, and you still have, you know, your son's in it, in the mix of it right now. But, you know, the pathway programs, if you can get in, are phenomenal and really good assets.
I'm locked in.
So, you know, I mean, those types of things. Then. Yeah, just paying your dues and spending the time and just keep building hours. Eventually, you're going to get there. I mean, you never know when you're going to get that call. I mean, just like you're going to take the first one you got.
Yep.
Apply everywhere. Yep. You know, you got your preferred. And I guess it gets more now where you want to live.
Well, I always wanted to live where I was based, where I could drive. Mm-hmm. Having to depend on getting on an airplane, commuting, basically, it adds a lot of stress. Because you never know. The weather, stuff like that can happen. So, you do get used to it after a while. I never wanted to commute. I never did. When we moved to Virginia, I went to fly the 757 International. They were flying out of Washington Dulles to the Caribbean. We would go down to San Juan and then bop around all the islands from there. And we bought a house we were living in the Sierra foothills in California, and I had a 2.5 hour drive to get to the airports there in the Bay Area where I was flying out of. And I told Linda when we moved, I said, you know, I want to live as close as I can to the airport that we can afford, you know, a nice house, blah, blah, blah. So we bought a house about 30 minutes from Washington, Dulles. Well, moved in, I flew about 6 months and they moved all the flying over to Baltimore. So Baltimore was an hour and a half drive from where we were. Still not too bad. So then I did that. By now, of course, my kids are in schools and all this kind of stuff. 3 years after we moved there, they closed that down, that whole base. So I went to New York. That was I had a choice of where I wanted to go, but I chose New York because at that time they had the 2 shuttles going. They had Delta and US Air had shuttles. Every half hour they had a flight from Reagan to LaGuardia. Now, I was flying out of Kennedy, but you learn how to get around, mm-hmm. you know. And Anyway, so I ended up commuting my last, I guess, probably 12, 13 years I commuted, you know, and I would drive every once in a while. Like if there was a, I remember when Hurricane Sandy, when that hit Long Island, and that was coming like the next day, and I knew we weren't coming back. And I had a trip to Rome. I was going to Rome. So we all packed extra clothes, you know, and I ended up spending a week in Rome waiting for that to all
sounds awful. Stuff.
It was terrible. Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah, most of the time I could get on a flight. A couple of times I had to drive just when the weather was.
I imagine that's harder now because, I mean, the airplanes are more have more passengers, right? Capacity is probably close to 100%. It seems like every flight I'm on.
It is, yes. The only thing that saved you was the jump seat. You know, you could get a jump seat. That would be the thing that could save you. And now with American, you can actually reserve. But this is before most of my commute, it was like a first come, first serve thing on the jump seat. Now they can reserve it, I think, up to a week in advance or something that. So that would take a lot of stress out of it. But, you know, you get out there and you're leaving there at say noon and your flight's at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, and you say, I got plenty of time. Push back, and then all of a sudden there's a ground stop. You know, the thunderstorm comes and moves in the way, and then they got everybody stop. Airplane breaks. You know, they got to go back and get another airplane or whatever.
So then what do you do?
Well, you keep trying. You know, then you go to a different airline, or you might go to a different airport, or whatever you have to do. You know?
And it's a tick against you if you don't make it?
Yeah, the airline's counting on you to be there.
How many ticks? Did you get any ticks against you?
I did not, no. No. We have a commuter policy now. This was before, when I first started, you didn't have it. Now they have, I don't want to quote it because I've been out of it for a while and they've had a different contract since I left. But they gave you two chances to get to your trip on mainline flights on their airline, on, say, American. Okay, if you didn't make those two, then you would get excused from the trip. But you wouldn't get paid for it either.
Yeah, but you wouldn't get a ticket.
You wouldn't get, you know, you wouldn't get in trouble for that. I mean, that's showing an honest effort to get there. So,
yeah,
there's just nothing you can do. And my argument always was, look, I always moved. They closed San Francisco shortly after I left. I said, I always moved where I could drive, and you guys just kept closing those bases. So when I went to New York, I said, man, if they close this down, we're done. You know, that's going to be it.
Glad you fixed your habits from your student pilot life to your airline pilot life.
Yes.
Yeah, you cleaned himself up.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, that's right. I did. I did show up. I did call in sick sometimes, so I did get sick, so I had to do that. Yeah, I didn't oversleep.
And you've told me you never played the standby, or not, what do they call it, not standby,
reserve?
The reserve game? You weren't a reserve pilot, you always liked your trips.
Sometimes I had to be on reserve. I always, being on reserve, back when I was there, you had to be, they didn't have a long call reserve, they do now, and I think we got one like our second to last contract, but it had to be reasonable surface transportation to the airport. So if reasonable, there was a two-hour thing, but you could argue that if you had to. But you had to be within reasonable surface transportation to the airport. So if you didn't live there, it was tough being on. If you live there and you're on reserve, it can be a good thing because then you can play the reserve game and, you know, pass around or whatever you have to do. But, you know, if I got called, I had to be there. So
yeah, on that. No, that would be, I know a couple pilots that do that at other airlines, not necessarily American, but they can capitalize on their finances if they play that.
Yeah. No, there's ways to manipulate the contracts where you can get a lot more flying. And I was never smart enough to do that. Or I always needed the time off that I had off, you know, or I liked what I was doing. You know, I didn't want to give it up.
This is something I don't think I've ever asked you either, but you know, when you get guys that are lifetime military, you know, there's a decompression phase as they get back into real life, civilian life. I would imagine, I mean, because you were flying 14, 16 days a month overseas. I mean, when you retired, that's a change for your household. I mean, not only for you, but for your wife. You're bugging probably more.
My kids were gone, and during COVID, it was good training for my wife because I was home. You know, so I said, "This is your training for my retirement, which is coming up pretty soon." She's like, "Oh my god,
that had to be." Yeah, I never thought about that. I guess COVID. I didn't realize that. Yeah, anybody sat that long for COVID during the COVID.
Yeah, it was quite a while. Yeah, I can't remember exactly how long it was, but I was still in that flight. I think I was doing more of the flying club stuff back then. I didn't have a gap in my actual flying, but with the airline, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be. But that has to be. I mean, after 36 years of being gone,
right? You know, half the month. Well, my wife said, she felt like a single mom. That's one thing. airline careers, you have to have a good spouse that can put up with you being gone half the time. Okay. Yep. So she said, you know, I was like a single mom, and a lot of times, you know, and I miss birthdays and holidays and things like that, but that's part of the job. So you do have to have someone that understands that. And so I think you find a lot of, Linda's not a flight attendant, but you find a lot of flight attendants and pilots that get married because they understand the job, you know, and they know, okay, this is what this has to do. And this is, you know, say I got called in for this trip or whatever, and they'll understand, you know, so.
Well, I think, I don't remember who you were talking to one time. I think we were sitting around the table at No Limits, but you had said, he must have been talking to one of the CFYs, but you said you won't be there for most holidays, but you're going to have the holiday. It's just the holiday is going to be on the 22nd or the 23rd or the 27th or 28th, and it's going to be a good holiday because the money you're making. Christmas isn't necessarily going to be on the 25th.
That's right. Yeah. That happened a lot.
That stuck with me. I remember when you said, I'm positive it was you saying that, but I just was like that. And that's good for everybody that's out there listening, you know, to have that resonate with them. You're going to have a good life, and you'll be able to do it, but you have to have a spouse and family.
And I found, especially with my kids being young at the time, I could get Christmas off, and the single people wanted New Year's off. And I didn't care about working New Year's, you know, because I couldn't stay up to midnight anyway most of the time. So, you know, it was a good thing because I'd try to get Christmas off, and then people that didn't have kids, or they didn't mind working Christmas, and I didn't mind working New Year's. So that was kind of the way that worked out too, a little bit.
No, I like it. So now for the butting of heads at the podcast. Don, tell us your thoughts on
automation.
Automation.
Oh no, Shane.
Tell Cambry that she's going to have a lifetime of.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Cambry will have a great career.
All the way till I'm 65.
All the way till you're 60. Well, by that time, you're going to be 90. They'll raise the retirement age.
Yeah.
They'll bring you on in a wheelchair or a stretcher, you know, and kind of tip you up.
By then, I'll probably be, half robot anyways.
Oh, that's true.
Bionic.
Yeah, bionic.
So, yeah, I mean, we talk all the time at the dock and stuff over here, and me and Cambry disagrees with me on some stuff, and you've got a different input, but I'd love to hear with the experience you have and the airlines and knowing the industry, you know, what are your kind of thoughts for anybody that's listening, for our 9 listeners out there, are thinking about it? What do you think's going to happen here 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road from
here? If I knew that answer to that, I would start investing my money. Yeah. No, I don't think that. I think the technology will definitely be available to have pilotless airplanes. I just don't think that, number one, the public will accept it, especially initially. I don't think that, you know, who knows? I'm just speculating.
Sure.
But I would say it's going to be at least 50 years before you really have, it's going to be an accepted thing. You know, this first thing that's coming out now are these like Joby and the air taxis, you know, that are going to be doing the local stuff. Are those going to be piloted or not?
Made to not be, but they can. I'm sure they'll start piloted, but I'm sure they're going to phase out the pilot.
They might phase it out eventually. But, I mean, there's just, to me right now, even if the technology's there, and the military, of course, is way ahead of this. They've already got drones that'll fly alongside fighters, I guess, and they can do all some of the more risky stuff and stuff that you don't want to risk somebody's life with. But anyway, I really don't know that either. I think that it's going to be a long time before there's going to be pilotless airlines. I think there's just too many things that who would cuff old lady? I mean,
I didn't even think about that.
What are you talking about? The robots are going to.
You got to have somebody there that can cuff the old ladies that aren't behaving. There's just too many things. There's too many variables, I think, that can happen on a flight that you can't program a machine to take care of everything.
How long until a pilot's remotely monitoring? And can take over hand fly from a cubicle.
Yeah, well, that could be something too. You know, that's probably going to be before there's nobody in the airplane.
So. I think, to back you up, Don, and I think you're 100% right. Like, and my thought process of timeline has definitely changed, probably in the last 6 months of stuff I saw. But I think pilotless, I don't know what that looks like. And you may be right, it may be 50 years. I think single pilot backed up with somebody on the ground and working with a computer is probably much closer than that.
Well, it could be much closer than that. The manufacturers, Airbus is always already working on a pilotless airline, and the airlines would love it. I mean, the pilots are one of their biggest expenses, and they can't control a lot of their fares. They can't control fuel prices. They control labor, and that's one of the things that management can control. And if they could get rid of half their labor, they'd love it. So the thing that's going to save that, I think we mentioned this the other day, you still have engineers on trains, okay? Yep. And they're going down the tracks, okay? I'm not sure what an engineer does on a train, but they're still there.
Engineer
stuff.
Obviously.
Well, they're going to be doing pilot stuff. I think the pilot unions are going to, they always do try to put a kibosh on this. I mean, they're trying to go to two pilot operations. Now, the long haul stuff, you have three or four pilots, you know, depending on how long it is. And you need to have the extra manpower there to relieve the other people. But having just one pilot on an international flight, you got to be kidding. I mean, can you imagine? Sure. You know, if you fly 16 hours by yourself and then you go in, there's weather at your destination and you're shooting an approach to minimums or a Cat 3 approach, you know, Autoland, you can't see a thing, and you're not on your toes, you know, you got to be totally there. And to have just one pilot do that would be, that'd be really, really risky.
For sure. And you're 100% right.
Even the autopilots that do that, I mean, they have they do that now. You have to monitor things. And sometimes things don't go right. Sometimes they get a glitch or a truck will drive by the localizer and, you know, you lose a signal and the airplane will go, whoa, you know, and you'll be off. Or, you know, there's so many things that can happen that, you know, you got to have somebody there to take care of it and somebody alert.
Yeah.
There.
No, I think, and I guess we're talking what I would assume for a single pilot, continental U.S., the 2 to 3 hour flights, you know, going overseas, you're going to have more, you know, even if they're cutting back or whatever. Yeah. And I think where I'm reading and kind of what the first venture will be into the cargo side of it, kind of that cutting back of pilots, seeing how that goes.
Because they won't kill anybody. They'll just burn up packages and the crew, unfortunately, would get killed. But if there is no crew, I guess they wouldn't.
No, it's interesting times. I mean, the technology's changing, and they are. I mean, as Cambry said, you know,
let's say somebody hacks the airplane. You know, you always have the terrorists, or that threat's always going to be there, unfortunately. You know, and somebody could hack the computers on the airplane somehow or other and crash it. You know, if you don't have somebody there, can disconnect everything and hand fly it. Yeah. You know. That's why I think it's going to take a while for the public to accept the fact that there's not a human being there. I don't think I would ever fly on a full crew.
That's what I said about Cars 2, Don.
Yeah, yeah.
And then?
Didn't take much talking to get
didn't
you in.
Didn't take much talking.
Yeah. They're still having some few things to iron out with that, too, though. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, you see these Teslas that crash every once in a while because people are putting the autopilot on. It gets blinded by a billboard or something that happened to that one down there.
Yeah.
You know,
I think I saw that they painted a road and they put a picture of a road, like on a road to where it wasn't going to kill anybody, and had the Tesla going, and it couldn't sense that it was an actual wall and it drove through it.
That's crazy, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, using cameras or whatever it's doing to sense it. But yeah, I would think.
I would not change my trajectory as a young person right now going towards the airlines because you think that it's going to be automated. I would not do that at all.
But I think that this is probably going to be one of the last generations of pilots.
15, 20 years might not be the best.
I don't know.
But in 15 or 20 years, like, you might all be vegetables.
That's true.
There's still people like us that like to fly. We're always going to fly.
What are we saying?
No, like Cambry. We're pilots that like to fly airplanes. And so we're always going to fly airplanes. So there's always going to be demand for people to learn how to fly, for people to charter airplanes, or for people to, you know, fly. You can't say maybe the transport airplane will change, but the general aviation and the fun flying is always going to be there. You know, it's always going to be there.
I said it the other day, as soon as Who is it? Joby? Not Joby.
Archer
calls me and says, hey, can you come down and fly this vertical takeoff, vertical land drone thing that goes 160 knots? I'm in. I will jump on the next airplane down there to go do it. I want one in my backyard.
You don't have to worry about your hair getting messed up by the fans.
Yeah.
You know? So, no, I mean, you know, as much as the automation and the electric and all that stuff scare me or you know, intimidate me in that, like, I'd be the first guy to sign up if I could get in some, you know, drone. We use drones at the dock to take photos and videos. Yeah. If I can get in a life-size one of those and take off and go cruise around, like, you got a helicopter and a Super Cub all in one,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's comfortable that you can play your music on inside of it. So, no, I think it's going to be changing, and I think you're right. I mean, it's aviation's been changing for the last 100 years
yeah.
or longer.
And
it's going to continue.
The fun
to
factor is always going to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's just it. And people enjoy it. And the freedom you get from it, you know, and all the feelings that you get when you get in the air and stuff like that. You can't do that any other way. And so I think it's always going to be, there's always going to be the demand for, there's always going to be pilots. There are always going to be pilots, Cambry. They're never not going to be pilots. Maybe not so many airline pilots. There's always going to be
pilots.
People
will be making a podcast like us 40 years from now and talk like we were talking about the train engineers.
They'll
be like, what do those pilots do anyway?
Yeah, well, we don't have rails to go on. We have to steer a little more than they do, probably.
They're oiling all the flaps.
But I think the labor unions for the railroad are powerful. And, you know, they save their jobs. And I think the pilots can do the same thing. And, you know, automation is great. It's another layer of safety for you, you know. But when everything hits the fan, you got to have a human pilot there to take over. So,
yeah. And, I mean, you know, we're seeing leaps and bounds in, is it AI, IA, whatever?
AI, artificial intelligence.
You know, I mean, it's going to take over a lot of different, not just aviation. I mean, it's probably going to affect all kinds of different jobs in the future, and who knows, it's we're living through a change. I mean, you get me and Don that have seen, Don's seen more than I have, but I've seen, you know, cell phones come into play and computers and all kinds of stuff. So I mean, the stuff you'll see in yours and Logan's lifetime.
Now, like, when they come out with a transporter, like Star Trek, I don't know if you're familiar.
Oh.
That's probably before your time, Cambry.
That is a little bit before
my
time.
Then they're going to get rid of pilots.
Okay.
They can beam you?
Because they can beam you here to there and there to there and all that stuff. So that's the way Linda, my wife,
well, it won't. You're just going to be in a comfortable chair like that with a headset on, and you'll be in Rome. Like, oh, this is where I want to go.
Right.
And
it'll
touch and feel the sand,
that's
and the
true.
Water and everything else. No, it's interesting seeing it, and you just don't know what that's going to look like, but it's been fun. It has been interesting watching it. But things are changing fast.
Yeah.
I mean, we sent we legitimately sent an email out the other day to a company.
We're going to get haters for this.
I'm going to say, you know, it's changing with the times. You know, there was a horse broker that bought 5,000 horses when Henry Ford started the assembly line. And they went all in on horses. And Henry Ford went all in on the assembly line. And guess who lost?
The horses.
The horses. There's a lot of dog food.
So did you send an email to some guy that has horse ranch?
Yeah
horses, we did. We're voting on the horses.
Is that your story?
We sent an email into to a vertical takeoff, vertical landing company talking about our tour business and seeing where they're at with that technology.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I'm kind of shooting myself in the foot. I was the one that sent the email. I'm going to take my own job away with a pilotless tour vehicle, but...
Well, no, you could still fly them. You still probably got 25 years of flying these drones. I think these Uber taxi cab things. I mean, there's going to be a point in time, I think, that they can do away with the people in there, as they are doing with the Uber cars.
Right.
Or the
there's a long ways to go with the cars still, though. So, you know, when you think about it, there's still quite a bit. I mean, you're going to have... I think it's great because people that, like, eventually I won't be able to drive. But, you know, I could call an Uber, and whether there's a driver there or not, you know, at least you can get to where you need to go.
Yeah.
You get to your doctor's appointment. Anyway.
Yeah, you'll be able to do that and those types of things. But it will change. And, I mean, we did. Me and Cambry talked about it a couple weeks ago. We were in a... Was it a Waymo?
Zooks.
That's right. Zooks. Sorry, I don't want to get the wrong. There wasn't a steering wheel or a set of pedals or even a driver's seat in that thing.
Yeah.
I think it was you were sitting backwards to the direction it was going.
Yeah.
You sat where the driver should sit, and you were sitting backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it got us there in half the time that your... Didn't you pull it up on your...
Yeah, that my map said, and I wasn't even scared once.
Yeah, I don't even think we stopped at a stoplight, but that's computers talking to
how
computers.
Fast did it go?
The speed
normal
limit.
Speed, yeah. Yeah. Didn't go over.
I mean, you weren't on the highway, though. You weren't doing 60 or 70 miles.
Mm-hmm. No.
You were in town.
40.
Yeah, it was 25, 35, okay. 40. Yeah. I mean, I think they'll go that fast.
They will. I looked it up.
Yeah, because I think they'll go...
60
they were,
something?
San Francisco, Vegas, and Phoenix, I think, is the three places they're running them right now.
I think if I got into a a driverless car doing 70 miles an hour. I'd be a little more nervous then.
Yeah, you know, a lot more higher consequence.
At
for
25
sure.
or 30, you're not going to get probably hurt too bad if something happens.
Well, you should have seen what you were driving in. I mean, unless it just like blows up with foam
or like a protective bubble
when you get an accident. All right, well, do you got anything else to say to for everybody out there, Mr. Captain Don?
No, not really. Like I say, don't give up on your hopes and your dreams. It's all there for you. You just have to go for it.
I love it.
Keep calling Cambry so she can be your CFI.
That's right.
That's right. If you visit my Instagram at flying.foster, you can fill out the Google form and I'll give you a call.
Nothing like a selfless plug. all right. Cambry, you got anything else other than that?
That's it. Thanks, Don.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for the watchers.
Thanks for all you do.
He doesn't have a microphone today. That's why he was so quiet over there.
Well, you should congratulate Logan on Logan passed his commercial written test
with a
99, was it? No, 80. Yes. That's great, Logan. Checkride's coming up, so maybe next time
Sunday.
You guys might be able to have news for him.
That's right.
And we want to say thank you to all of the new young men Instagram followers that Logan has. He would really be interested in having young women also follow him and send him messages. So he appreciates both, but that's the Rogers Boy.
B-O-I.
At Instagram.com. So we want to thank him for that. And of course, just because we want to thank our corporate sponsor,
Jim's Gunsmithing.
Yes.
You guys need any gunsmithing
done
or restorations?
Do you use Jim's gunsmithing?
I haven't yet. I know.
Fake fan.
I want to go shoot at his range is what I want to do.
That's right. So, all right, guys. Well, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Again, if you appreciate what we do, like and subscribe and share. We will be here and we will see you next Friday.
Bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.